In the land where many search for pizza, pasta, and amore, they find themselves surprised that life has to do with more than just those three simple details. In this episode of Not Your Average Globetrotter, I wanted to talk about some of the mistakes that I've made, as well as some of the mistakes I've seen others make when moving to Italy, living in Italy, and a few little details that may help those of you thinking about moving to Italy in this episode of Not Your Average Globetrotter. Roll that intro. Hello there, I'm Rafael Di Furia. Welcome back to another episode of Not Your Average Globetrotter. So, let's just jump straight into this. And the thing that I would say I was really the least prepared for before moving to Italy was the rental contracts and how getting a rental even worked. In Italy, they don't have a credit system like they do in the US, where you have a credit score. That's more what I mean when they don't have a credit system. They do have credit available. You can get a credit card. It's not like that doesn't exist. But the credit score system is not quite what you would find in the US. There is, from what I understand, a blacklist, but there isn't a list of people with necessarily trustworthy credit. The way that it generally works in Italy is that things run through your work contract. If you have a long-term work contract or an indeterminate work contract, basically a contract that has no end, then you are going to be in a much better position. Those don't necessarily come so easily or so regularly. So for example, like if you're trying to get financing on a TV or a refrigerator or whatever it may be, or even if you're trying to get a mortgage for a home, this will often run through what your work contract is, what your working situation is. If you don't have those in place, you may find it difficult, if not impossible, to find any type of loans available for you. But this also comes in the shape of what landlords would like to see for potential tenants. And so often you will be asked for work contract and proof that you actually have some sort of income. Thing is, if you're coming from abroad, and yeah, maybe you have your social security coming in the US and you have it in a bank account in the United States, landlords in Italy might not actually care about that, because if there is a problem with you not paying, there's no real way for them to be able to go for those funds. If it is in Italy, then there's ways to garnish wages and to deal within the Italian system. But if it's on the other side of the world, then that presents a challenge to them. So one thing that I did when I went to Italy was, like anywhere else, when you're thinking about moving to another location in the world, you get a couple months ready for the deposit and security, the first month, last month, and maybe even, agent or whatever. You prepare yourself in that way. But in Italy, I often found that the landlords wanted first month, last month, and a lot more than that, because when I arrived, I didn't have a work contract. And some landlords wanted a check from the bank that was in a secured account, a fiduzione, that they wanted to make sure that the money was going to stay there and be held there. Some landlords wanted a few months, and some even wanted like 12 months up front. To me, that's a bit absurd to pay 12 months, or at least have 12 months rent locked up. At the time when I moved to Italy, that wasn't even an option for me, and there were apartments that I saw that got along well with the landlords and everything went well and this and that and the other. But even though I may have had the money and ability to get into the apartment, because I didn't have that contract, they weren't so confident to be able to move forward. And I don't blame them, because of how the laws are set up in Italy and how difficult it can be to get someone out of an apartment. There are legal processes that you have to go to, and sometimes even for landlords, they don't even go through those legal processes because they end up being more expensive than just waiting for the contract to end. That's the other thing, is that in Italy, you want to be prepared for the type of contracts that you will end up finding in apartments or even a home or whatever, especially if you're looking to rent. If you're looking to buy, this is of course a different situation. But if you are looking to rent, the normal contract terms are normally referred to as 3+2 or 4+4. Yes, Italians love to do math in this case. And if you don't know what 3+2 or 4+4 is, that means you have a contract that is 3 years plus 2 years renewable, or 4 years plus 4 more years renewable. And that's the thing in Italy. These are normal term contracts. These are not considered to be long term. I mean, again, I've mentioned this in earlier episodes of Not Your Average Globetrotter, where, or even the Italian real estate podcast, where in the States, a year would be considered, ooh, that's a while. 2 years, that starts to become long term. Not starts to be, that's definitely long term. And then you can get month to month. But in Italy, this doesn't really exist, especially because the system is set up in such a way that to get someone in the apartment legally, they have to go and register, and there's costs for the registration. And so it's time, energy, and money. And to have to do that every so often isn't worthwhile. And even to begin with, this gets into a kind of social mindset. Just in Italy, people don't move as much as they do in the US or even other countries. In Italy, I think it starts from a young age. The social group that you are with from your, say, first years of elementary school all the way through the end of high school can be the same people. Not that it always will be, but you often see these social groups formed at young ages. So you are kind of within the system, the Italian system, put into this mindset that things remain similar for a long time. And it's also much more common in Italy that people remain with their job for a much longer part of their life. I mean, maybe even you get the same job in your 20s. Your first job could be the same job that you retire from when you're ready to finish your work career, especially if you get one of those longer term, indeterminate contracts, because if you have one of those are golden. And even to be fired from some of those jobs, especially I think government jobs, I think are more difficult, but that's a different situation. But still, what I'm saying here is that even by the time that you see Italians going to university, that's kind of the first time that their social kind of scene changes a little bit more. And so it's not uncommon, especially if you go to smaller towns in Italy, that the social groups are very tightly knit, and to become part of a social group is much more difficult or impossible. Maybe if you marry into the group, if you have that type of integration through a spouse, that's maybe a different situation. But generally speaking, unless you're in some of the bigger cities where nobody's from that city to begin with, like, say, for example, Milan. I'll talk about Milan in a second, though, because there's another point that's related to Milan and larger cities. But if you are living in a smaller town, be prepared that you can make friends, but the social connections that people have are often with people that they've known from a very young age. And it's not about willingness or non-willingness. It's about openness to expansion of that friend group doesn't always happen. I've seen that many times with many people going from outside of Italy to Italy and becoming frustrated. Not that it's impossible to be become a part of a social group in Italy in a smaller town. I'm just saying that there is a social norm that differs greatly from the US, where, for example, in the US, changing your career often or getting into a new career is not like this unheard of, not so different thing, and moving every year or every few months, or okay, every few months, that's maybe a bit extreme, but moving year to year, or maybe every couple of years. Granted, of course, there are plenty of people who stay in the same house their whole life, but even at least in school, you're also, from one year to the next, often in the public school system, going to have different kids. Maybe you will have the third grade class, and everybody within that class, it's going to be like four classes within the elementary school, but the next year, your classmates, the people in your classroom, might not be the same. They'll be still part of that same year, that same class, but things can get shifted around, and you learn different social dynamics and how to deal with people in a different way. Whereas in Italy, that happens in a different set of circumstances, where the people you are around, you really need to be able to deal with for a very long term, from a very young age. But one thing that I wanted to say also about cities, because I mentioned Milan. Not that I would have moved to Milan specifically. I don't necessarily recommend moving to Milan. It can be a very gray place, a very cold place. Although, actually, let me get to that point first. That one unrealistic expectation that many people have about moving to Italy is the weather, especially if they are moving to the north. Many people think that moving to Italy, oh my gosh, the weather's going to be amazing. It's going to be fantastic all the time. And it's going to be beautiful. And it's going to be sunny. And it's the dolce vita and all that blah, blah. But the north of Italy can get bitterly cold. I mean, in the winter, it can snow, and very often will rain, and it's a humid cold that will go straight into your bones and hurt. I've had that bitter coldness, this specific feeling I can only think of how to explain that I've experienced in Italy. I've not experienced it in other places in my life. And whether you're in the Alps, or you're in the cities, or you're in the Veneto, you're in Venice, you're in wherever, things can become very, very cold, and not just outside, but inside, because you have to remember, generally speaking, apartments, buildings, homes in Italy aren't insulated the same way as they are in some other parts of the world. I mean, maybe you'll have insulated windows, but it doesn't mean that the walls are necessarily going to be insulated. And I remember one place that I was in that I've mentioned this before on Not Your Average Globetrotter, where I was sitting inside of an Italian apartment, and it was a really, really windy night, and you could hear the wind just rushing around the building and howling. It was really, really loud. And I would hear the rush of wind outside. And then a second later, with a little bit of delay, and it was the same exact delay each time, I'd feel a little, not gust, but a little breeze kind of push against me of wind. I thought I was imagining things. I was like, I checked the windows, I checked the doors, I checked everything. Everything was shut tight. Then, I didn't know this was possible. I still don't understand how it's possible, but I wish I had a video of it, but I went up to one of the walls. I felt this little breeze come through the wall. I was like, no. I'm imagining this. How can something like that come through a wall? I taped a piece of paper up against the wall. I waited, and the piece of paper lifted. It was freezing in there, and it was windy inside of the apartment. I don't think that's going to be something that people will find. I think there must have been some really weird set of circumstances to allow for that to happen. But this is something that stands out in my mind of an example of how cold and windy and wet it can be there. And yes, the south of Italy can have much better weather. However, it's still not going to be always perfect. And even if a place is advertised to have 300 days of sun or whatever, not all of those days of sun are going to be warm. That's something to consider. But getting back to talking about being in a big city, this is one thing that I wouldn't say I regret necessarily, but I think was a mistake, that I didn't live in larger areas when I lived in Italy. I had spent time in Milan years ago, and I knew that place wasn't for me. So when I was actually moving to Italy, I knew that I wanted to be there in a smaller place. I didn't want to be close to expats. I wanted to be fully immersed and living in Italy. I ended up going to Alto Adige, maybe one of the least Italian regions in the country. But at the time, I was under the impression that for the type of work that I do, that there would be something going on and something that could be possible there. However, it ended up not being the case. And this was even after a lot of research. So even if you are the type of person that does a lot of research, your boots on the ground experience can be very different from the theoretical research that you do online, even if you are very good at researching. I've become very good over the years at researching different locations, not just for myself, but for others. To know what a place could be like. And I can usually have an idea within a few minutes of looking at even just videos and a few basic pieces of information if the place could be livable for me. And that's even before getting there. But I had done that same research for Italy and then ended up finding there were these small extra details that go beyond what you would find normally. And even sometimes the information, if you're looking for sunny weather and this and warm and blah, 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 sometimes that information will be put online and could be misleading. But when I'm talking about living in a bigger city, one of the reasons why I'm talking about it is because I do believe that for my work, it would have been much better. I would have had more opportunities and there would have been more possibilities to have more options and flexibility within the field that I work in. I work in very loosely video production, audio production, and marketing. But living in a small town, regardless of where you are, there are challenges that get presented, and living in a small town in Europe is very different than living in a small town in North America, my personal opinion. But also, even from a social perspective, like I said, I kind of avoided the expat bubbles and the expat circles. In other countries that I had lived in before living in Italy, I had spent time kind of stuck in some of those expat bubbles, and I knew I wanted to get away from that. I knew I wanted to separate myself from that. But what I came to realize is that, especially after living here in Portugal, there is a benefit to at least having an expat community accessible and somewhat close by. The reason why is because there are going to be things that you're going through that you are not going to understand what some of those differences are, like I've mentioned before, earlier in this episode and in other episodes as well, that you are going to have people that are all kind of going through the same thing or have gone through the same thing and understand what your situation roughly could be. And that's the thing in not only dealing with apartments, but jobs or visas or this or that or the other. You can have people there who you can bounce things off of, or even to not be completely isolated. There were times where I was isolated and I had Italian friends, I had friends from other nations, but I would say if I had lived in a larger area, that would have been a little bit different in my personal experience. I enjoyed the areas that I lived in. However, for me, I can see that they were not maybe the most ideal in every way, even though I really did enjoy spending time in these places. Other than the events of 2020, of course. That was definitely the biggest mistake, was moving to Italy just before all of that. A few years before that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But that definitely also, I will say, kind of shadowed on the overall experience that I did have in the nation. And it's very sad. And that's something that even now, when I think of my experience in Italy, I do have some of those feelings kind of left over from that period of time and what had changed and what had happened in the nation. Thankfully, though, the areas I was living in were still decently connected on some of the high-speed lines, or they had hospitals and so on. Like, for example, if I had been maybe down in, like, Puglia, for example, like really far, far south, there are places where you can be, or even in the north. I'm not going to say it's a southern thing or it's a northern thing. I'm going to say, regardless of where you are, if you are really out in the sticks, out in the countryside, and say you have an emergency, a health emergency, getting to a doctor could be a challenge. Getting to a hospital could be a challenge. You're not going to be guaranteed that you're going to have all of these things right there accessible. And so even though the areas that I lived in did have hospitals that were accessible and usable, I would say those areas for me would be just small enough that I wouldn't want to go any smaller than I did. And they do have a hospital there. It is a provincial capital. But I would say for me, I might prefer to be in a little bit of a larger city. But that's, let's keep in mind, I know there are many of you who watch this channel who are interested in getting your dual citizenship through your ancestry. What I'm talking about is living in Italy. If you're making an application for citizenship in Italy, then you do want to go a bit on the smaller side, but not too small again, because maybe they don't even know about the procedures involved with registering a birth at a later stage in life. And it's not about size. It's just more about knowledge and education of some of the clerks and staff may be necessary depending on what you're doing. That's why. That's a whole different discussion for a different day. But this is what I'm kind of getting at, that there is going to be a kind of Goldilocks zone with how large of a city or how small of a city. Now, having my time outside of Italy, there are other places in the country that I might be more curious about to spend more time in, that I didn't really spend as much time in, or not even at all. I mean, for example, one place that I can think that I would be a bit more curious about, at least when we're talking about size, opportunities, and not too big, not too small, maybe someplace like Torino or Bergamo, for example. But I wouldn't say that I would necessarily want to live in a place like Rome. But, I mean, Rome, it's a wonderful city. I can't say that I would say that it might be the best place to live, especially if you're raising kids, but people do it. Would it be the place for me? I'm not going to say that for sure. Even maybe a place like Verona or Padova. There are a lot of different places. Yes, I do have a little bit of a preference for the north. At least in some regards, as someone who is in a stage of life where he does need to work. But if you are a retiree, I would say some of these things are definitely applicable that you would maybe want to take into consideration, especially healthcare and access to healthcare, because the older you get, the more that can unfortunately happen. But also a common misconception that I see is that many people think that, hey, I'm moving to Italy, I'm learning Italian, this is going to be great, this is going to be amazing, and then they get there and everyone around them speaks dialect. In the cities, yes, maybe you'll be more likely to find people who speak Italian. But even then, like, you go to cities and you'll find people speaking local dialect or a version of Italian that is influenced by the dialect. Not that that's going to be everybody and everywhere, but this is something that many people don't have a realistic understanding of how much it can influence daily life. I mean, especially if you go to someplace like Naples, or even for me, going to Rome, even though I spoke Italian, even though I can still speak some Italian, I had some difficulties with the accent and the way that the language was spoken in Rome, just because I was much more accustomed to more northern Italian, like Lombardy and Veneto. Those dialects are the ones that my ears are more accustomed to, even though they're very different from each other. That going all the way to Rome, I had to start listening much more carefully to what people were saying and to even listen for different words that would be used. I mean, even the word for a bag in a supermarket can change. So there's like little small details from daily life that can change depending on where you are. But then you get to a place like Naples and some people even call it a separate language. Whether it is or isn't, I'm not going to get into that in this episode. But even then, when you get into Sicilian, again, we're talking about another form of Italian that exists that differs greatly from what you will learn as general standard Italian if you're studying the language before you arrive. So even where I lived in Rovigo, I was very excited that when I moved from Alto Adige, where the kind of predominant language was German, to move to the Veneto, and I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to be speaking Italian. I'm going to be learning Italian. Mostly, I found myself interacting with individuals that were dialect speakers or that had a very thick Veneto accent. In the end, I could start understanding and interacting and communicating, not in dialect, but in Italian. I understood and still understand some pieces of dialect still, but I think that actually may have to do with some of the Spanish and Portuguese that I have, because the dialect there somehow relates to Spanish and Portuguese, oddly enough. But okay, Latin languages, different story, different day. Anyway, this is one thing that I would say is also very important to understand about, from a linguistic perspective, what are you going to be getting yourself into? And that's something, again, you really only get when you have your boots on the ground. But I think this is where I'm going to round out this episode of Not Your Average Globetrotter for this week. So thank you so much for joining me, and especially a thank you to those of you who help to make these episodes possible on a monthly basis through rafaeldifuria.com/support, as well as rafaeldifuria.com/Patreon, as well as the thanks button here on YouTube. Of course, if you agree or disagree with anything I have to say, feel free to let me know down in the comment section here on YouTube. I'm Rafael Di Furia. Stay safe and healthy out there, and I will see you all next time. Later. We'll be right back.